Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Sal Capaccio.
I make a special capaccio for you, right?
Yes. Oh, now that sounds really good.
Oh, you like?
Hey, get away! Get away from my wife with that!
What's the matter, carpaccio, no good?
What? What do you do now?
They don't like a carpaccio.
They like capaccio.
Oh. On WGR.
I make a capaccio for you.
Sports Radio 550.
Open Championship. Sal Capaccio. Sal should be playing. He shot a 37 on the back nine yesterday.
Confirmed?
Yeah.
No cheating?
He had a Rory McIlroy-like start.
You get an eight?
Yeah, I shouldn't say that. But he said his front nine wasn't great, and then he shot a 37 on the back. You go sub 40 on any nine. Huh. Look out.
You're not talking miniature golf, right? You're talking real golf course.
Yeah.
Okay.
Porter Cup's on the way. They played up at Niagara Falls Country Club.
Yeah, they're going to be playing next week, I think, is the Porter Cup, right? Sal's on our Western Hotline. Is that legit? 37? Clean? Pure? No cheating?
I can't even believe you'd even ask me that.
Hey, Sal.
When you,
you're a Yankee fan.
Did you play the right ball? Are you sure about it?
I played the right ball. I do not take mulligans when I play.
No?
I count every stroke. I'm a true, pure, like, it matters to me. Like, I mean, you've got to play. If you're going to play golf, you play it the right way, just like you should anything.
At least if you're going to tell people what your score was.
Yes. Yeah, you know, that's a good point, Jeremy. Right. Like, I don't care. If I play with somebody and they take a few mulligans here, I don't care. Just don't go to the clubhouse and tell me you beat me.
Yeah.
Because you were taking mulligans, right.
Like,
right.
I don't care about that. But I play my true score all the time. I take, like, I mean, I shot a 37 and I had a lost ball. Like, I had two triples on the front for a 47. And then I shot a 37 on the back for an 84, but on hole number nine, it was my worst shot of the day, and I bladed it, and I had a lost ball, I had a drop, and, you know, I wound up with a triple. So, I mean, that's just what happens. But, yeah, and look, I played with Brian Koziol, and Brian shot a 38 on the front, and I'm like, oh, wow. My God, that's amazing. And he wound up, I think he shot, like, 76. Brian shot a 76.
That's pretty good.
I was impressed with 84. I didn't know Brian shot a 76. That's really good.
It was incredible.
Yeah, that was great scores.
Listen, we played. It was us two, Nate Geary and Jonathan Koziol. We were all in the 80s, terrific. And Brian was in the 70s.
You guys should be in the Porter Cup.
It was pretty remarkable. I've never been that dialed in. It was awesome. Wow. But here's the other thing. So let me tell you I'll ask you, Jeremy, how you are with this. So we get to the tee box at 18. Brian is driving. And he says to me, do you want to know your score? And I said, no, because I know I'm playing well.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew if I knew the score, I'd get the jitters on the box, right? And he said, what's your best nine ever? I said, well, I shot a 41 earlier this year. I may have had a 39 back in the day, but that was like with mulligans when I wasn't taking seriously, so I don't count that, obviously. So I'm pretty sure it would be 41. He said, just hit the ball straight and you're going to break it. And then I'm like, come on,
don't
you
even
can't tell
me that.
That.
Yeah, you should have said that. Yeah.
So it's a long par three. It's a 170-something. I put it in the trap, just missed getting on the green. I'm like, oh, my gosh. Got out of the trap cleanly. I bogeyed. There was my 37.
Very nice.
Wow.
What would you have wanted to know, Jeremy?
I think it would be impossible for me not to know. I can't not keep my own score in my head.
Do you check it every – I mean, after every hole?
It's not about checking it. It's about – for me, when I play, it's I'm shooting to score a 90, which is bogey,
right.
Which is bogey golf.
Me too.
Yeah, pretty
too.
Much.
But you broke 90 earlier this year.
I broke
right?
a 90 a
number of times.
Several
okay.
times this right, year, so not... once or twice.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I will always in my head. I'll be plus one, plus two,
yep.
plus
okay.
three.
Okay.
You know, get a birdie. Like, ooh, that's two off. All right, minus one. Hmm. So I always know where I am in relation to shooting a 90.
Me too, Jeremy. Actually, my goal is 44, basically, right?
Yep,
so
yep.
45 or 44, however. So I do the same thing, and I knew after a few holes, I'm like, okay, I think I'm back on track here. But I was playing so well.
Right. It's possible that I could get enough minuses where I lose count, and then I wouldn't
yep.
check.
Yep. I mean, I had two birdies on the back, and I'm like, I just don't want to know. Like, I'm just playing well, and I don't want to know and mess it up. So it was a good day. It was fun. And I'm glad. I'm thirsting for more, and I'm searching for my first sub 80 ever if I can get there.
Well, Kyle Williams isn't at Bill's training camp this year. Andre Roberts is the resident really good golfer. So you have to tell him all about it.
I will.
Who else is it? Who else is a golfer? Josh Allen's a big golfer, right?
Josh Allen's a big, yeah.
Good player, too?
I'm pretty sure, yes. I don't know exactly what his handicap would be, but I'm pretty sure. I'm not really sure who else is. I mean, obviously, the front office we know. You know Brandon Bean is.
Yes.
Joe Shane is. I'm not really sure who else. I played a couple guys. I know Dave Wheat's pretty good. He's in the front office. He's pretty good. There's a bunch of people. Last year, David Culley, the quarterback's coach, I played with him in the Bills scramble. He was a, like, 10 handicap. I mean, he's a good golfer, but he's not on the staff anymore. So people can play, man. You never know.
Yeah. Well, they've got about a week to do it, and then they got to get to work. A week from today, actually, maybe even earlier than that, with rookies reporting on Monday. So I had somebody ask me, how do teams decide when they go to camp? How come Denver's there a week early? How come Hall of Fame game?
They have right in there 2 weeks prior. Or
but
something?
There are other teams that aren't in the Hall of Fame game that are beating the Bills to camp. And is there any rhyme or reason to it?
You can't have a practice until 15 days before your first preseason game.
Okay.
You can report, I believe, before that, but you can't have a practice. So I think that's kind of up to the teams individually and when they want their guys to report. I do think there might be something I don't know. I have to go research the CBA on when the earliest you could actually have them come in. But I think you get a few days window there. And I think rookies even more so, which is what you see. But you're not allowed to have, to my knowledge, any practices until 15 days before your first preseason game, which if you backtrack on the Bills' first preseason game, that puts them right at 15, basically. Might even be 14 for them, but it's right there.
I'm looking at the NFL website, and a lot of the veteran days, the Bills is the 24th, and you'll see the 24, 25, 26, 24. It's fairly standard. I've got Atlanta is 3 days ahead of that, and they're not playing in the Hall of Fame game, right?
They're playing Denver.
Oh, I thought it was New Orleans.
No, it's Atlanta-Denver. I think it's Atlanta-Denver.
So those two teams get the head start because of the Hall of Fame game?
Correct.
The Jets, right. The Jets have their rookies report 5 days before veterans. The Bills, it's 2 days before veterans. So it's not like the Bills are getting a late start here.
No, and if you remember when the Bills played in the Hall of Fame game under Doug Marrone, Sammy Watkins rookie year, I remember that camp was early. You know what I mean? We were there quite a bit. They reported earlier on. It was a week earlier than normal, and that would make sense, obviously. So, and when that happened, it made me start thinking about teams that had reported early versus how they did in the season. There is no rhyme or reason. It all depends. I mean, there's a risk too, right? I mean, there could be more injuries because you're practicing. Your training camp is longer. Or if you're gelling better, that's a plus, I guess. But I think that's there's no real rhyme or reason, and it depends on which team too. By the way, for example. I mean, the Baltimore Ravens have been docked for how hard they have their practices when they're not supposed to. I bet you their longer training camp it might even be more detrimental to them if they had more practices the way that he runs it. Some teams might run it lighter or heavier, so I don't think there's a rhyme or reason if it helps or hurts you.
Sal with us here on our Western Hotline, brought to you by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? You have a couple articles up this morning, Sal, WGR550.com. Before we get into specifics of the articles, maybe a little background on what has become, an annual thing right now, right, for the media to have a chance to sit down with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean?
Yeah, Derek Boyko, the excellent PR director over with the Bills, came to us when he first took over a few years ago and said, hey, something he used to do in Philly, he was the PR director there. He said, we would have the writers and other people who write, like me, I'm not considered a writer necessarily, but I write for the website. He said, get together with the GM and the head coach sometime during the middle of the summer, and you guys can pretty much ask whatever you want on the record. But we take all of the information they give you, and we have you can't use it until right before camp. You kind of as a group decide when. That way it gives us some content leading into camp. The team basically helps us out in that regard, and we can obviously think about and start putting together our thoughts and opinions about the camp and the team in conjunction with kind of what they say, but also great content for our readers. So we did this back in June, right after OTAs ended. It was myself and, whatever local media outlet is out there that you read or listen to or whatever. A lot of us were in the room. There was probably about 15 or so reporters. And Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott, we sat for about an hour with them. And this is the date that we're allowed to kind of tell you the things that were said in our own way, however we want to do it. And I've structured a couple of different articles here, and you'll see more from me leading up to camp.
In general terms, how do the brain trust of the Bills feel going into year three? Their plan, where they're at, that type of thing.
So they really believe that and feel that they've put themselves on the right track and that they've kind of stuck with the plan, so to speak, right? Which is come in, clear the salary cap, get young players, build through the draft mostly, add some pieces through free agency due to the cleared salary cap, and then have the cap flexibility going forward because of this to be able to figure out which guys you want to keep and be able to do it and not be in a situation where you're going to really, you know, cost yourself because of cap jail, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, Brandon Bean came here. This team was in cap jail. He doesn't want to get back there. He's made that. He's told us that. And that's the quickest way is to start suddenly saying, okay, we're clear now. Now we're going to hand out all these big contracts. They brought in 18 unrestricted free agents. He said 2 years ago he didn't think they'd be doing that necessarily. There was no number. But he knew that if he cleared the salary cap the way that he had to, that he'd have the flexibility to do that if they were in that spot. And here they are, and they're in that spot. But at the same time, he also said, don't expect this to be the norm. Don't expect this to keep happening. That's not the plan. The plan is now to get these young guys kind of in the fold and locked up. This was, I think, kind of a one-year one-off of this many types of free agents.
I thought it was interesting. We were talking about this a little bit earlier about contracts and flexibility, and the Sabres are kind of like this too. I thought what Brandon Bean said was interesting about how when he came in, you know, there you wrote about, you know, what's on my checklist? Find the right coach, although the coach was here, and he said that's why he took the job. Get the franchise quarterback, get the cap in order. And then he talked about coming in and evaluating the big contracts and trying to figure out, okay, who's got the big contracts? Do we need these guys? And taking a couple of years to figure out exactly what to do on all the big guys. And if you look at it now, they really don't have a lot of big contracts, right? Latulale, Mitch Morris, there aren't a lot of big deals that they're locked into.
Correct. And LeSean McCoy is on that list.
But he's in the final year.
That's right. But here's the thing. They don't need to clear any of them, right? I mean, they're not in a situation where they were with over the past 2 years where they say, here's a big contract, and by the way, we need space.
Yeah.
They don't have to do that. This is why so many people just assumed they would move on from LeSean McCoy because of his age, his production, I get it, but they always tied the salary into it. When you would hear people talk about it, you'd read people, they would tie the salary into it.
Right.
There was never a consideration about his salary because they don't need the money. If this was last year, maybe different. If they were in a spot where they, you know, had to create some flexibility, they thought they were, you know, kind of close, but, you know, what are we having here? But there's no reason that they had to do that financially, at least. The only reason why you would move on from LeSean would be maybe because of production, age, and whatever, but not financially. So that's the difference in the big contracts. You're right. They do have some. And they signed Jerry Hughes to a big deal, which, by the way, that's kind of what they're trending to do now. They're trying to do, which is identify those guys. And Jerry's not one of the young guys, right? He's a veteran. He's 30 years old. But he is a guy that even the example that was used in one of the articles I wrote, which is that's a guy they identified and said, he's part of our long-term plan here. We're going to make sure we do that. Now, the challenge is going to come in, and this backs up the other article, which is you have Josh Allen on a rookie deal. You have Tre'Davious White on a rookie deal. You have Matt Milano. You have Tremaine Edmonds. You have Deion Dawkins.
Yeah.
You have a lot of really important players on rookie deals. Those bills are going to come due at some point. So you have to really start projecting out what you have. Now, you have the flexibility with Tre'Davious White, Tremaine Edmonds, and Josh Allen to have a fifth-year option. So you don't have to necessarily say, okay, this guy expires in 4 years. You can have them expire in 5 years. But the more that Brandon Bean thinks about, you know, how he wants to structure it and how he wants to attack it, then he can kind of put his ducks in a row, so to speak, and decide where and when to place that money and how to do it. And that's really what he's trying to get to.
I don't want to steal thunder from future articles, but I'm sure the topic of Josh Allen came up in the discussion.
Oh, yeah.
Generally speaking, you know, where do the GM and the coach feel about his progress from year one and what their expectations are from Josh Allen going into year two?
Well, look, they have expectations for him. He needs to take a step forward, and that's why they went out and did what they did. They made this offseason pretty much all about Josh Allen, right? I mean, they surrounded him with weapons. They surrounded him in front of him with new offensive linemen, and they went out and got another quarterback's coach that they feel he can. I'm not saying, and like, I don't know, you know, David Culley kind of left. It seemed like he wasn't fired. You know what I mean? Whether it was mutual or whatever, you know, he's gone, but they went out and got a guy that they trust, that they feel, and Ken Dorsey will be a benefit to him. They kept Matt Barkley. They kept Derek Anderson before they knew he was going to retire, because a lot of that was how they were all integrating with Josh and what they can help Josh do. and they feel good about their young quarterback. They feel he's in the spot where they need him to be. Did he play earlier than they expected? Sure, I think that's fair to say. But now he's here, it is year two, and he's going to get all those reps. So, yeah, they expect Josh Allen to, you know, take a jump in year number two, and you know that's what he needs to do.
I think one of the other things that was interesting too, Sal, one of the articles we opened up about, it essentially gets to continuity, you know. So it's year three for Bean and McDermott, and you had pointed out, what, it's been, you got to go back to Marv and Butler to find the last time the same coach and GM were here for more than 3 years in Buffalo.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's not good. And I think in terms of the Pegulas, and of course you look at the changeover with the hockey team too, I would think the Pegulas would love to get to the point and probably do feel fairly comfortable with the continuity of their coach and the GM right now.
I think so. You know, I think they trust them. That's the biggest thing. It's trust. That word is thrown around a lot, I mean, not loosely, at One Bills Drive. It's trust. I mean, Sean has to trust Brandon. Brandon has to trust Sean. A lot of what we talked about was that too, yeah, which I haven't wrote about yet, but about the trust they have amongst each other. Because when you're doing this thing, you're of course going to have disagreements. You're of course going to have a philosophy here, a philosophy there that kind of collides. You're going to disagree on personnel. And those are the things that test these relationships. Those are the things that test these, you know, partnerships, if you will. And it's not just GM and head coach. It's GM, head coach, and ownership. Mm-hmm. And they all have to be on the same page. And even if there's a disagreement, even if there's something that, you know, somebody feels strongly about, as long as you trust that person is doing what's in the best interest of the Buffalo Bills and not in the best interest of that individual, I think that's how you overcome that. And really kind of what's been portrayed in my conversations with them and what they talked about is they know that each other is trying to make the Bills better. It's not out of ego. It's not out of pride.
Yeah.
It's out of, this is how I think the Bills can be better. Even if you have those disagreements, it's easier to get over those. And I think that's what the Pegulas see, and that's what they want. So, sure, they trust Sean and they trust Brandon. They want to win. They, I think, feel that they're in a spot where they can take that next step as well. But it is interesting, you know, that we've gone through all these head coaches, all these GMs, and this is the first time we have two guys going into year three together in a long time.
Yeah. And the relationship, too, you know, when you were talking about trust and all these different things, and you can think about, you know, Marone, Whaley, Ryan Whaley, all the crap that happened with the previous coaches and GMs, and I'm sure that the Pegulas don't want to have to deal with that stuff again. Before I let you go, get in a plug for your other article that you also posted. You were doing the series of AFC East battles, position battles. You've worked your way finally to the defensive secondary, the defensive backfield.
Yeah, I wanted to do safety and corner separately, but damn, Bill Belichick didn't let me do that because he lists 13 guys as DB and only one safety in Patrick Chung. So, and by the way, it wasn't just him. It was actually kind of funny. What I found in the research of this piece was Brian Flores, who obviously comes over from New England, he's been really tinkering with his personnel in Miami as well. Minkah Fitzpatrick, is he a corner or safety? You know, they've kind of moved some guys around and some guys will be playing different roles there as well. Brian McCain, the same thing. He was a corner. Now he's playing mostly safety. Bobby McCain. So in spring. So it's interesting how, and the Bills are kind of like that too. You got Saran Neal, who I point out is a little bit like a hybrid now.
Yep.
He's been playing closer to the line of scrimmage. But here's the thing, guys. You could look at all teams in the NFL and say, let's take a look at their two safeties. Let's just take their four starting DBs. I don't know if you'll find many teams in the league that have their top three guys as solid and as talented as the Buffalo Bills.
Mm-hmm.
With Poyer, Hyde, and Tre'Davious White. I mean, that is a really good starting spot. And then you could have something special on the other side if Levi Wallace continues to develop or if Kevin Johnson stays healthy, that's fine. But those three really put them in a great spot. I would say this, though. The entire division has good defensive backs.
Yeah, I was going to ask, Sal, if this was the toughest one. Because
I think so,
Jeremy. Miami's got Xavien Howard, Jamal Adams with the Jets. Like, there are top-line players on every one of these teams in the division in the secondary.
And not only that, Jeremy. After what I just said about the Bills, I had the Patriots number one.
Hmm.
I mean, you look what they have. They have the McCourties. They have Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
They have Patrick Chung. And they have depth players that play and have produced, actually. And you go look at, you know, their roster and you look at some of the production they've had. Like, they do a really nice job. And by the way, they play a lot of DBs. That's why. They really only play two linebackers. They mostly play nickel defense, the Patriots. But they just use them in different roles. So if everybody stays healthy for the Bills, I think they're probably the best. But because of the question marks with Kevin Johnson, Taron Johnson, EJ Gaines, I just couldn't put him number one. I did it the Patriots. But you're right. The thing about the Jets is really good safeties. We know that. Jamal Adams and Marcus May, who's, I think, good. He's maybe not to the level that a lot of people thought he'd be at this point, but he's still a good player. They do have Tremaine Johnson over there, who didn't really have the year he had last year. He was hurt. But after that, Jer, they do not. I mean, the Bills, oh, week one, I'm telling you this, the Bills better be just going after those corners, because I looked at their roster. Their corners are not something that they should be expecting much out of this year, or at least hoping that they can get something out of it. It's not good in New York, and that's what really docked them.
Yeah, well, was it Tremaine Johnson? I'm trying to think the big contract they handed out to
that was Tremaine Johnson
and
last year.
He really didn't play up to what they were expecting him
to
do.
Yeah. And he got hurt. And on top of that, they signed Brian Poole this year in free agency. I mean, he could wind up being their number two DB, and he's a guy, right? Yeah. I mean, like, at this point in his career, I mean, I think he had three interceptions last year, but they don't have much. Daryl Roberts is their – he might be forced into a starting role. We'll see, but the Jets are very strong up the middle on defense. Defensive line, linebacker, C.J. Mosley, you go to their safeties. But I would be attacking their edges and especially their corners in week one. I think that's got to be the game plan right now as I sit here for the Buffalo Bills.
Sal, as always, thank you very much for coming on with us this morning. And everybody check out Sal's fresh articles, including everything we were just talking about with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. Those are up right now at WGR550.com. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
All right, guys. You bet.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.